welcome to the inaugural episode of the Somewhat Creative Podcast. My name is Kyle Miller, and this is a show about improvisational music. Features music and conversation with some of my friends who are musicians. I'm sure the first few episodes will be rough while I figure it out, but bear with me, it might get better. You don't want to miss out on it if it does, and then you can tell all your friends that you were there when it was crap. Then you can ditch it once it gets popular and say it was better back when, even though it clearly wasn't. The idea behind the show is I'll be meeting up with different folks with different musical tastes and seeing what kind of music we can come up with. I'll be the only constant. My first guest is Andrew Chapman, someone I've known for 10 plus years and played music with for a good portion of that. He has more effects pedals than Florida has meth labs. He's a mentor in that way, that is with the pedals, not so much with the meth. He's really great at making noise, so if you like what you hear and would like to check out the music he makes on his own, check out his SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/mob. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but it's spelled M-O-A-B. So soundcloud.com/MOAB. So here it is, some music and conversation with my good friend, Andrew Chapman. Remember the first time we actually played music together? It probably wasn't until you had the practice studio.
Yeah, that adventure.
Yeah.
Gravity Studios.
Yeah.
Rehearsal Studios.
I tell the story of basically how you decided it was going to be a bar at one point.
Well, rent was really, really high.
Yeah.
Because basically it started out with my friend Gabe. Mm-hmm. You know Gabe. Gabe and I got drunk one night and started talking about ideas aside from recording studio, and came up with that idea because I was thinking about how when I was in LA, if you wanted to go jam, you could just go downtown and rent a rehearsal space by the hour, which they don't have here. Or didn't at
still
the time.
Still
don't? I think there's, when we opened ours, there was one more opening in town. And
I guess you can do it at Guitar Center also, actually, right? Now that I think
just
about
go hang out. Yeah. But I wanted to have, like, you know, a lockout, like 24-hour lockout plus hourly rental space, and have like concession, all that stuff for people to come in, hang out, a little waiting room place where people can just talk about music and all that stuff. And then I told my friend, and he just ran with it and found us a really expensive warehouse, started doing construction. Just, it went pretty crazy. Like,
it looked great when it was done.
Yeah. The second time around, the first time, all the rooms were painted different colors for some reason, even though we're putting soundproofing on the walls. So it was kind of like, yeah, wow. And then we went back and painted everything gray again. And we had a couple bands come through. We almost booked Cindy Lauper. She was coming into town and was going to book out our back room area. Well,
hold on 1 second. How did that come about?
I guess she saw the internet website or something. Her management saw it or something.
Did anybody ever talk to any Cindy Lauper management about it?
There was emails went back and forth, I think.
Was Captain Lou Albano involved?
I have no idea.
Rubber bands in his beard and all?
I just know I did not enjoy the place. We weren't booking enough bands to cover rent, so we decided to try to have bands show up and play, and couldn't get a liquor license or a beer and wine license because we didn't have a mop sink, which we had just put carpet in, and there was only about a 2-foot area to actually need mopping, but it was a requirement by state law that we had a mop sink regardless of what kind of floor we had.
You got to mop up the carpet.
You got to mop the carpet, yeah. And but yeah, it was nerve-wracking. I did not enjoy it at all.
And the way you found around that was?
I don't want to go into that. I will plead the fifth on that because I had nothing to do with it.
Fair enough. And
it was chaos every day after I got off work and went there.
It was fun to play music there,
and we
up
came
on the stage.
We came up with an awesome game there before we put the stage in.
That's what I was about to say. The music was great, but
Black and Blue
Black
Balls.
And Blue Balls was the most fun game.
Which sounds terrible. It was like dodgeball with two balls. One's black, one's blue, and they do different things.
Just making up rules on the fly.
And it was an awesome game.
It was. It was a lot of fun.
We should have just turned it into a Black and Blue Balls arena and made money that way.
If only I would remember any of those rules.
I can't remember a single rule.
No.
You could catch one. You could throw one. It was...
It had something to do with running back against the wall or something?
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
A lot of rug burns.
Yeah. God. Man, there was so much. Like, when we put that carpet in, I was there that whole night, all the guys installing the carpet, and it was just like the fumes from the glue. Oh, God. It was terrible. Yeah, I don't really have too many fond memories of that place.
It was fun while it lasted.
Walking out to the back when some band was loading out and they're stealing our drum kit. I had to go out there with a baseball bat and get my drum kit back. Yeah, fun times.
So I think that was probably the first time that we played together then.
Probably. Were you playing with Mixtape Masters?
Yep.
Yeah.
Did.
All right. That was before your, that was Sugar Free days, so you weren't playing with Ray
yet. Oh, yeah, I wasn't playing with Ray yet.
Yeah.
We played three shows of pop punk song covers.
Yeah. Our first night there was really packed. I was surprised.
I don't think I was there the first night.
Man, it was crazy. Insane. And then it just teetered off. We had like one blues night, and some guy showed up that was from the Orlando Blues Society or something like that, and just came in and gave us shit like we had broke some violations of some local laws by not having them involved, because if it says blues, then, you know... He wanted to make sure it was cool for his people to show up.
This was Jimmy Vaughn.
Yeah. No.
I don't know. Maybe he thought he was.
I think it was Jimmy Ray.
Jimmy Ray Vaughn?
No.
It's like he doesn't even have the Vaughn part. He's just got the Ray.
And then we had that Pink Floyd cover band, which was interesting. I don't know if you were there for that night.
I don't think I was there for that either.
They were like some good old boys. You'd be surprised to listen to Pink Floyd. And aside from technical difficulties with one of their amps going bad, they actually really did well. I was like, holy crap, they sound like Floyd.
Yeah. Yeah, rednecks like weed, too.
Yeah, I guess. That's what they were doing in the parking lot, so it makes sense.
Now, how would you say the weed was? Was it good or was it crap?
I'm not a connoisseur. You'd have to talk to my former business associate. He would tell you the quality of if it was crap or not. Inside joke.
I don't know. I think probably you recorded me that one time.
I did.
Yeah.
The Clay song.
That's right.
Yeah.
The only song that I've ever listened back to the vocals and went, yeah, that'll do.
That'll do.
Yeah.
That'll do, pig.
Because otherwise, I'll try to put down vocals on a song, and then the next day I'll be like, this is not good.
No one likes to hear their own voice.
I should have, which is the reason I started a podcast.
Yeah. No one likes their own voice because our voices sound different to us than what we hear.
Thank you. Michael Jackson was off the wall.
He was.
Not quite the ceiling. Lionel Richie had to come in and just step it up a notch.
He had to go there.
He's like, oh, Michael, I see you're off the wall.
So this is our second Check attempt this out. At the podcast, and Lionel Richie has come up again. Lino Richie.
Yeah, that's a carryover from the last time we talked. Yeah. I think I'll just include that part from the last recording where we talk about Lionel Richie.
Lionel Richie.
Member of the Thundercats.
Remember the Commodores.
Commodores, Thundercats. Commodores, ho.
Commodores, ho!
Does anybody remember the names of any other Commodores?
Oh, man. No. I just drew a blank. For a second there, it was like there,
you had
but
something.
It went away pretty quick.
Interestingly, speaking of the Commodores, not that the Commodores are necessarily bad music.
Right.
But I wanted to devise a little game on this show.
Oh, God.
In which I want to test your knowledge of bad music.
Oh.
But you have to be honest.
All right.
This doesn't work if you like... Or like, oh, I don't know, I don't listen to that crap.
Oh, yeah, I'll be honest. I used to work at a music store, so I might have some knowledge of some terrible music.
All right.
Just so you know, if you ever go into a music store and the employee acts like they don't know the song you're talking about and makes you sing it, they know the song that you're looking for.
Just being a dick.
They're just being a dick. I used to do that all the time.
So if somebody came into your record store and asked you, who played drums for Poison?
Wow.
Your response would be?
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon?
No. I'm trying to picture Poison in my head. That's Belle Biv DeVoe, right?
Not that Poison.
Let's see. Damn. Can I phone a friend? Jarrett will know.
You cannot phone him or my very first college roommate.
Or your brother.
My brother would definitely know.
I can't even think of the guitar player's name.
Oh, come on. You know
CC DeVille.
CC DeVille. Nothing?
Dickie Betts? I don't even know who that is.
You're not that far off. I mean, with the Dickie part, because it was Ricky.
Ricky Rocket?
That is correct.
Ricky Rocket.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is Dickie Betts?
Yeah, Dickie Betts is in Allman Brothers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Wow.
He survived.
How did you know that? He who hates jam.
It's true.
More of a jelly guy.
Well, I mean, I have played in a quasi.
That's true. Americana.
We'll call it that.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Round two.
Question number two. Now this is, I'll just ask the question and then I'll preface. Wait, I don't think that's what a preface is. So.
I don't think so either.
Then I'll explain. How about
okay.
that? Okay. Who wrote the song? Who wrote Rod Stewart's Downtown Train song? See, that's a bad song, but it was written by a good writer, I'll say that.
God. The only person I can think of that's a good writer that everyone covered would be Bob Dylan, but I don't think it's a Dylan song.
It's not.
So I'm going to go with... Billy Joel.
Billy Joel. I'll give you a hint. Coffee and cigarettes.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Not Jim Jarmusch. He didn't write it.
Oh, okay. Then, well, it really doesn't narrow down too much either because it could either be Tom Waits.
That's why I'm giving you a clue.
Or it could be Lou Reed.
Could be. So. One of those two.
What was the song again?
Downtown Train.
How's that song go?
Very clever.
Very clever. I'm going to go with Lou Reed.
You're wrong.
It was Tom Waits. It was
Tom Waits.
Fuck. Yep.
See? Really?
Harvey Keitel.
Really? Really crappy song that you're like, oh, this is terrible. And then you're like, oh, but it was written by one of the greatest songwriters of our generation.
Yeah, it's true.
Not his version, obviously.
No.
Yeah. Name two members of New Kids on the Block.
Oh.
First names will suffice.
Fuck. See that? I really only know. I only know one of them, but all I know, I can always get the two confused. The Wahlbergs. Okay. Like, which one was actually in New Kids? So I'm going to go with Donnie.
Correct. You're halfway there.
And I'm trying to picture every girl I dated in high school's bedroom with a New Kids poster on the wall.
Wait, did you date middle schoolers when you were in high school?
They were still popular. Yeah, I know. With, and don't forget, I'm older than you. So, shit. Wow. New Kids, huh?
Yep.
Donnie and...
Do you want a hint?
Let's see. Sure, I'll take a hint.
It's you have a good chance if you say a name that starts with the letter J.
Johnny? No, John?
No, John.
James?
No, James.
Jeff.
I wish that were true.
That'd be awesome.
Like, who's your favorite New Kid, 12-year-old girl?
Jeff.
That's the worst New Kid's name ever.
Yeah, right? Joey.
That's correct. Joey is a name that was a New Kid.
Oh, God. What's his last name? Ha!
That's a good question.
Damn. Can you name all the New Kids? Because your wife's a fan, I think, probably.
Yeah, probably. Even though she was way too young for it.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm going to go with... there's Donnie.
Donnie.
Jordan.
That sounds right.
Joey. Danny McIntyre. Joey McIntyre.
Oh, look at you.
And there was another one. Donnie, Jordan, Joey, Jeff.
Blaine.
I don't.
Blair?
What, are we doing the Facts of Life girls? All right, what were the other Facts of Life girls' names? Having nothing to do with music. I might actually be able to get
Harvey
this.
Harvey Keitel?
Well, you had Blair.
Blair.
You had Joe.
I don't remember the Facts of Life.
And the other one.
Yeah.
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 I think that's the problem with a lot
Steve.
Of groups.
Steve.
You get a lot of them, and then you're like, and, you know, that last one.
Man, these questions are hanging tough.
Whoa. All right. Now, here we go. This is your final question.
Final question. Is it a bonus round after this, or is this the bonus round?
I'll try to think of more questions, but these are the only ones that I jotted down.
I like these.
Name two songs by Smash Mouth.
God. See, one should be like... here, because I just watched the movie Rat Race again, and they're at the end of the movie. They ruin the movie at the end because they show up. And then I used to work at a store that had Muzak CDs that just played pop hits. We got a new CD every week, and there's always a Smash Mouth on there. So I'm going to go with just how many songs I got to name? Fuck. They had two songs?
They had at least two.
Oh.
I'll give you a hint. Two of their biggest hints.
Don't.
Okay.
I'm filtering through a Muzak CD in my head right now. There's the new Pornographers or whatever they were. That wasn't who it was. Shit. I almost went Lionel Richie on that one, but Walking on the Sun.
That's true.
Fuck yes. That's one. You can see me bobbing my head to the tune.
This is great for
you. Know what song it is. Yeah, it's great for a dead air time here. Mm-hmm. I can hear the whole song in my head. And I can't think what the damn title is. Yes. Hey Now, You're a Rock Star. That's the chorus.
That is part of the chorus of the song that you're thinking
which
of.
Which is called Rockstar?
Not quite.
Hey Now?
Nope. If you were a really good athlete and they have this one game where they collect like all the really good players to play in
All-Star?
Like an exhibition, there you go.
Is this a song All-Star, not Rockstar?
It's called All-Star, but they do say Rockstar, I do believe in that chorus.
All right. Wow. My knowledge of pop music is terrible. I remember one time you didn't believe that I'd know who the fuck Lady Gaga was. You're like, there's no way. I'm like, I have no idea. I've never heard of one of her songs. You're like, there's no way. But no, I had never heard one of her songs.
Yeah, I mean, just through, I don't know, like media penetration, you would think that you would hear.
Mm-mm.
Something like that.
Mm.
Like in a Walgreens. Mm-mm. In a on the TV.
Speaking of shopping,
yeah,
I remember having a really weird experience at like 3 o'clock in the morning at a Walmart and Mazzy Star came on and I was like, what the
what Walmart was this?
The scary one up on Sand Lake.
Oh.
Fade Into You came on. I was like, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a bonus round?
Nope, that's all I got for right now.
How many points did I get?
Let's see. You. Depends on if you want to count the ones that you got a little help with.
Oh.
I'll call
but
you. Yeah.
The way I look at it, since I am the first,
mm-hmm.
I am the
you're
champion.
You're in the lead right now.
I am in the lead. Do I get a belt?
Yes, but you got to give it away.
If it was Texas, could I get a buckle?
As soon as somebody beats you, though, you got to hand over your belt.
Mm. Damn it.
Right now, you're the middleweight champion.
All right.
I don't know what weight classes or what in fighting. But
I don't either.
All right. So now that we've
established that I know nothing.
Established that you know nothing of pop music.
Yeah.
You got about 50% of them right. Let's be fair. You did okay.
You got about 50% of them right 20% of the time.
Right. I mean, I only wrote down questions that I also predominantly knew the answer to, so.
Yeah. Which scares me.
Yeah, well. So, guitar-wise.
Hmm.
Just run down some of your guys.
Or gals. Let's see. Johnny Marr.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you like about Johnny Marr?
His, how you can make twangy sound cool.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't. Let's see. Johnny Marr. I'm trying to think. Obviously, Nick McCabe of the Verve.
Yep.
Fripp. Robert Fripp.
Really?
Yeah.
At what point did you get into that?
Fripp?
Yeah.
I think it was when I first heard about Eno.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, no, it wasn't even that. I used to work with a guy that was a huge King Crimson fan.
Right.
He used to always play King Crimson stuff. So then he started showing me all this other record collection. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I found Eno and Fripp stuff, which is really interesting, some of it.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel about I mean, I like Brian Eno a lot and stuff he's done with other artists.
Right.
A lot of his just like old stuff, like just the Brian Eno records, are just a tough listen.
Yeah. Can be.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for just putting it on in the background, I guess, but.
Yeah, he's the grandfather of ambient.
Yeah.
Let's see, guitar players. David Gilmour.
Sure.
The Edge.
Strikingly similar to what I like too.
Yeah, so Gilmour, The Edge, John Squire.
Speaking of,
you know,
at what point did you, because if you're like me, you kind of, I mean, you're a little tad older than me.
Yeah.
But you grew up just kind of with, like, you two, we'll say. And, like, I don't know, I didn't really think about breaking those songs down until I really started playing guitar, which wasn't until I was 16 or so. Mm-hmm. 15 is when I started. But I just thought of, oh, those are good songs. But then I just kind of, I don't know, that kind of seeped in.
Right.
Without me even really realizing it. But I think at some point, I think it was when I was listening back to, for The Edge, like Achtung Baby.
Mm.
And it's different than his like other sound. Like right. It's more Joshua Tree,
right.
even further War. Back, Boy in War.
Yeah.
The song Love is Blindness has a guitar tone that I would love to have.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like a solo in it, and he didn't often play like solos.
No,
it was just kind of like, I mean, it was kind of just like a lot of phrases.
Right.
That was kind of what the solo was, but it's kind of chaotic.
Mm.
And I think when I really listened back to that, I was like, oh yeah, I really, really love this guy.
Yeah. I was just thinking, talking about like influences, I have to say my influences when I was first starting playing guitar was like, well, Hendrix, loved Hendrix, and then Page, Jimmy Page, really liked some,
it's a real obscure guys, I guess.
Yeah, really, really obscure. There's some Stevie Ray Vaughan, because one of my dad's friends used to come over and play guitar. Always, he could play every Stevie Ray Vaughan song, so I sit there and jam with him. And then, let's see. But that's the stuff that like, kind of got me into guitar. And then I started listening to, you know, Cure, Smiths, and all that kind of stuff, and U2.
What was your first guitar? Was it acoustic or electric?
Electric.
Yeah.
The first guitar I ever had access to was someone loaned my dad a guitar to let me play around on, and it was a classical guitar with probably about 4 inches of action on it. So it was impossible to play. Like, it might have been a lap steel.
I probably didn't even realize at the time.
No.
Like, my very first guitar is kind of not that high, but it was...
Yeah.
Not set up, and it was pretty poor.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize it was like that until I played a good guitar. And I was like, oh, I this is how it's supposed to be, I guess.
Yeah, you couldn't even make a chord with this guitar. It was, by the time the string made it to the fret, it completely changed tone.
Right.
And went out of tune. It was bad. But then I got my electric. I don't know if I was like 13 or 15 when I got my first electric.
But you're skipping 14 altogether. You're like, I know it wasn't 14.
It wasn't 14.
It was either 13.
I really remember that year. That was a really pivotal year, you know, 14.
One, two, four.
Five.
Three, sir.
Yeah, I got my electric guitar and I didn't get an amp. Talk about that before, of course, but no one knows that.
But nobody knows that.
Right. Yeah, so my parents got me a guitar for Christmas because my neighbor had one, and I really wanted to play. So they bought me an electric guitar and did not get me an amplifier because they didn't know any better. And I just sat there playing with my head really close to it. And not
did you ever try to plug it into like a stereo system?
I did once and did not go well.
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, this sounds awful.
Yeah, I give up.
I don't understand things like amplifiers.
But then I got my high school I was at in Alaska. They had a guitar class that I didn't even know about, and there's a kid jamming in the hallway, and I was like, that's a cool amp. And apparently it was a real piece of shit, but he sold it to me for $5, my lunch money.
What about, is that where you first got it, was in Alaska?
Mm-hmm.
What is a music store in Alaska like? Or did you get it at a music store?
The guitar?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it at a music store. It was a little small music store. It was like almost like a pawn shop almost. The sad thing is, looking back, is when we went into the store, they're going to surprise us, my brother and I both, with electric guitars for Christmas. And there's like pick any guitar on the wall you want kind of thing in this price range.
Mm-hmm.
And the first guitar I picked up was a Les Paul Jr. And it was a vintage one, which was marked down because it wasn't a very popular guitar at the time.
Right.
And I was playing on it, but then I saw this shitty Series 10 Korean, like the photo top on it. It's hideous.
But it looked cooler to you at the time.
But it looked cooler to me at the time. It was blue. So I was like, huh. So this beat up, like, vintage guitar I missed out on because I was ignorant. And looking back, it's like my first guitar could have been a Gibson Les Paul Jr. Yeah,
I can see that. Like, I remember looking back at because all I had was like a Yamaha acoustic at the time, mm-hmm. and I really wanted an electric, and I was getting like Musician's Friend catalogs,
mm-hmm.
and I was looking through, and there was like this, you know, Mexican Fender in there, but I didn't really know the difference between like a Mexican Fender Strat and an American one and all that stuff.
Right.
I just know some were cheap and some were expensive, but I saw one that like had gold hardware and five-way selector and a little button, and I'm like, that's the one I need.
That's it.
And
that's
for years, I was like, I'm going to get that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I was like, I played one and I was like, this isn't good at all.
Yeah.
But I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have had something
nice.
Yeah.
Probably would still have it, even though I still have my Series 10.
What was the first, like, real good guitar that you played that you can remember?
Kid down the street from me in Alaska, Eric, his his dad, I really wish I had been, like, more attentive as a young man, because his dad was a jingle musician. Like, he did commercials and stuff, and he converted his entire, like, you should have seen this, like, long hair, like, mullet guy look like Billy Ray or some shit. And but he was like back and forth between LA and Alaska all the time, his dad. So one time while he's on his trip to LA, like, I was hanging out at Eric's house, and he like gave me his dad's Olympic white Strat, mm-hmm. to jam on. He's like, well, you don't have a guitar yet, so why don't you play this? So yeah, I had that for like a couple months. And his dad came really mad to the house to get the guitar, and I was like, oh, my bad.
He told me I could have this.
He said I could borrow it. But yeah, like, his dad had his garage converted into a recording studio, and it was like 64 channel mixing desk, like isolated booths and like floating floor, like legit recording studio,
right,
in his garage. And like, if I had known that's what I wanted to do then, I'd be in a completely different place now, probably.
Yeah, I had a friend, and I was probably not until I was like 19 or something before I played. Like, a friend of mine's granddad had like a super nice Les Paul, like old Les Paul, and I played it, and I never really messed around with a Les Paul, and then right away I was like, oh, that's what I need.
I never liked Les Pauls.
It was perfect for me.
I like the way they look. I just don't like, I've never played one that I really liked.
Clearly, maybe if you would have bought that one.
Well, that's true.
Les Paul Jr.
Well, yeah.
Yep. That was.
Even then, I didn't like them.
Yeah.
They're heavy.
Yeah. All the things I like. Have tone.
Everyone I've ever picked up this have a terrible setup on them. Like, I just can't play them.
Yeah. It is a world of difference. Like when I go between that Les Paul, if I jump to the Telecaster, especially.
Oh yeah.
If I go, especially go from the Telecaster back to the Les Paul.
Right.
Then it's like, geez, I don't remember this neck being so thick. You get used to it back again, but.
There are baseball bats.
Yeah, and I love it.
Just never understood that expression.
I think it's because I played acoustic for a very long time before I played electric.
Yeah.
That Les Paul felt better to me. A little bit bigger body, if you will, heavier.
Yeah, like my hollow body.
Bigger
neck. God.
So when was it that you would consider that you got I don't know, the guitar that you always wanted? Have you still gotten? No. What is the guitar that you?
There's two. I always wanted a vintage ES-335 Gibson, and with a Bigsby on it. And I've always wanted a Vox Starstream.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a badass guitar, and I never got one.
You mentioned Nick McCabe earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall even like first time you like listened to The Verve?
Yes.
I mean, was it a situation where you're like, oh, that's the band that I'm going to follow around the country?
It was more of a pivotal time for my guitar playing than anything, because that shitty amp I got in high school for $5 was terrible, and it had nothing but clean.
Wait, did you say a $5 amp is terrible?
I know. The sad thing is I wish I had it still. My brother lost it when he moved one time. How do you lose an amp? But whatever. But that amp had like chorus vibrato effect and reverb. And I was not like, I would go to my friend's house and play with his dad and play guitar over there. And we'd be playing metal, like Metallica, Ozzy, Black Sabbath. You can only jam through Iron Man so many times before you're finally just like, I'm tired of it. But I found myself when I was playing like alone with that amp, I was playing a lot with the effects more than I was trying to learn how to play guitar. And I was finding like different tonalities and harmonics between different notes and just fell in love with that sound. And that's kind of like why I was like Gilmore and The Edge and stuff like that were a lot of influence on me. But then the first time I heard The Verve and heard that guitar tone and sound, I was like, there it is. That's pretty much the exact thing I've been doing for the past 15 years or so, or 10 years.
Do you remember
years.
What the song was?
Wow. I think it was Already There. It might have been Already There, I think.
Because, I mean...
Or no, it was Feel.
Let's just state for the record that you were on board well before...
What?
Bittersweet Symphony.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I think it was something off the EP. I think it was like Feel or Gravity Grave or one of those kind of things. And just, I remember not liking the band at first because I couldn't get behind the singer. Like, at first, it took a while to really get into it. Like, the music I love, like the bass, the drums and stuff, but his voice on certain tracks has kind of annoyed me. And then the more I listened to it, the more I was like, it actually fits perfect.
Especially in those early recordings. Because, I mean, the vocals are so sparse in a lot of those songs.
It's blended well down.
Yeah, yeah, it's well into the mix.
Yeah.
It wasn't until Urban Hymns that it like was way out front.
Let's not talk about that record.
There's some good songs on there.
Can we pretend it never happened?
I mean, to be fair, I mean, that's how I got into them.
Yeah.
It was actually not even like when that, I mean, I listened to Bittersweet Symphony, but that's not one that was like, man, I gotta buy that record.
Right.
I think I had heard like Drugs Don't Work like later.
Yeah.
Like a couple of years later. And I was like, oh, that's a really good tune.
Yeah.
And then I heard Better Man and I was like, oh, I really like that one too. I don't know why that Bittersweet Symphony song was their single.
First off, Better Man, I think, is a Pearl Jam song.
Better Man. Oh. I was like, man, they really sound like Pearl Jam on this record.
Calling you out. Pearl Jam, great band, though.
Sure.
I'm not going to knock Pearl Jam.
Yeah. Can you knock them now?
No, not really. All right. I mean, McCready's a fucking amazing guitar player.
Lucky Man.
There you go.
It took me a second. I'm like, what is the name of that song?
Yeah.
But yeah, those were later additions.
Yeah.
I was like, I should probably check out other stuff that they did.
Yeah, I think it was like discovering The Verve like made me not feel strange. Because I remember going to people's house like, oh, you play guitar? And I'd be like, yeah. And then I'd show up and they'd be like, all right, we're playing in the key of G and we're blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no idea what the fuck you're talking about. Why don't you just play and I'll come around and figure out what you're playing and I'll play with you. Because I could play by ear quite a bit, but I just always gravitated toward trippy psychedelic guitar sound, and kind of ambient guitar sound.
What are like some other examples
of
stuff that you would have been listening to at the time that would have?
Let's see, Smashing Pumpkins, Gish. I think the pivotal band that really, aside from like Floyd and all the obvious, you know, it was the band that was pivotal in guitar music for me was Jane's Addiction.
That's interesting.
Because they came out at a time where there was like metal, and then there was hair bands, and then there was goth, and that was like your options.
Yeah, and Jane's Addiction, especially for the late 80s, was
they were
drastically
way,
different.
Like, they were the original alternative rock band. It was like once they came out, then they started putting cards in record stores that said alternative rock. Like,
I mean, there were other bands.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Pixies and
Pixies,
Sonic
yeah.
Youth and stuff that were around, but they didn't sound anything like Jane's Addiction.
Yeah, Jane's was just...
They had their own particular...
Yeah, it was heavy, melodic, and just...
But you're right about it. I mean, it does have the psychedelic...
Yeah.
Kind of thing to it.
So I guess I could say Navarro was another.
Which is weird to say now, considering.
Yeah, what happened?
The host of a tattoo show. And
yeah.
Like, I'm sure he's a wonderful human being.
It's just so funny to just to think about the career arc of that band, like going from like junkies in LA and being in this, like wearing dresses on stage and being crazy to like running multi-million-dollar music festivals and being marrying Carmen Electra and all that kind of stuff. Just like, what?
I think Stephen Perkins is probably still the same guy.
Now, like, he seems to have mellowed out and became, like, chill. I don't know. Like, they were all kind of, like, crazy back in the day. At least that's the perception that you got from what they presented.
I think Perry and Dave were probably both crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably just heard less from...
But Stephen Perkins, like, that's got to be the best drum video that I've ever seen. That when it came to, like, tutorial drum videos, like, his was, like, just cool. Like, he could make a beat with anything. He's, like, just...
it's no Flea no. bass tutorial.
That's the best.
So there is a bass tutorial video with Flea filmed in the early 90s featuring River Phoenix as the interviewer. And if you've not seen this, I'm sure it's on YouTube.
It's got to be.
At least parts of it. It's you got to find it because it's tremendous.
It's got to be.
My favorite quote from it being River Phoenix in the most stoned possible way was just like, do you ever play with a pick? To which Flea responds, no,
one in my hand.
Only if I have one in my hand. Like, well, that's about the most perfect response, I guess. Because I also only play with a pick if I have one in my hand.
It's usually how it happens. Yeah. I play a guitar only if I have one in my hand.
Usually.
Yeah.
As Chappie looks for it on YouTube.
No, my internet's completely down for some reason.
Yep, no internet. But I advise anybody who's listening to check out the Flea and River Phoenix bass tutorial.
Weird.
So we played music that you will hear also on this podcast.
I'm sorry in advance.
Improvised some stuff. And I didn't at all say, Chappie, we're playing in the key of G.
That is true.
I wouldn't be able to do that either, so...
Yeah.
That's kind of one thing I'm worried about doing this podcast, that I'm going to...
You're going to encounter those people?
I'm going to come up with somebody who's going to be like...
Okay, well, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
When you encounter those people...
Yeah.
Do you find them to be creative at all?
They're usually just playing the same...
Like, they've never gone out of the box to me. Like... They know their scales and their modes, and if you say, like, you play, like, a rhythm, they will play something that you expect to hear. It's like the old Nashville charts, like, oh, you got a song in G, we got a whole bass line of drums ready to go for you. It's like,
I mean, never there's met. There's something to be said for just, I mean, a little knowledge of where to go
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, you don't want to, like, but you should be able to, if you're playing music at all, you should be able to tell, like, okay, that was a sour note.
Yeah.
Like, but I find people that know too much are not as creative. Like, they don't write, they just play.
Yeah.
Like, they can grab any chart, any song. They can go to Sam Ash and grab a, I don't know, fucking New Kids on the Block sheet music, and they can play it on ukulele.
I'd like to believe there are still music stores that have New Kids on the Block music.
Probably Sam Ash.
Yeah. No, we never send any of ours back.
This thing's kind of faded.
It's going to sell one day.
Yeah.
Just keep marking it down.
One day. You're going to hang it on a wall at a Wahlburgers.
Joey, Jordan, Jeff, one of those dudes are going to come in.
Blair.
Joe. You know, the New Kids.
Johnny.
So we played the other night. Or tonight.
Yeah, we played tonight.
Is that the illusion that we're going to give?
We're going to go there with the illusion, yeah.
Talk about the guitar that you brought over.
It would be my beautiful Mexican jazz master, because I don't care. I am not Donald Trump when it comes to Fenders. I don't believe you should build a wall. I don't.
And how are we going to get those Mexican Stratocasters?
Exactly.
Telecaster? How are we going to get the Mexican Fenders in?
Do you remember Arnaldo?
Did you ever work with him? I didn't ever work with him. I met him before.
He won a contest once from Fender where he got to go to the Fender factory in Corona,
mm-hmm.
I think it is, California. And then he got to go to the Fender factory in Mexico on this trip. And I asked him how the trip was. He's like, oh, it's great. For the record, Arnaldo is an awesome musician. He played guitar for, the hell's his name?
Ricky Martin.
Right. Played, yeah, he toured with Ricky Martin for years as his guitar player. Great musician. Awesome dude. But I was out at Guitar Center listening to him talk to a customer about guitars, and the guy was looking at Fenders. And the guy's like, well, I don't want to pay for the American, but I don't want to buy a Mexican, you know, because it's Mexican. So, like, I want to get a American, but I just got to save up for it. He's like, listen, I've been to the factories, both in California and in Mexico. And the one thing I saw was both guitars are being made by Mexican women.
It's true.
Yeah. He's like, they're still being made by Mexicans. I was like, wow, that is true.
It's insightful.
So I don't doubt there's probably some difference. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard all the differences, and honestly, when I was shopping for the Jazzmaster, there was a American Jazzmaster that I played, and it sounded terrible, and I hated it. And then I played this one, and there was a problem with the bridge, and switched that out, and it sounds way better than the American did. So, I don't know. I love it.
At what point did you know that you wanted to get a Jazzmaster?
Let's see. When did Sonic Youth start playing? That was another influence I left off.
Really?
Yeah, that's another influence I left off. Besides, like, Velvet Underground, Sonic Youth.
Sonic. Now, okay, for Sonic Youth records,
mm.
Are there some that are just, like, for you, tough to get through? There's one that I can think of that I listened to a couple years ago. It was like is it All Hallows? Is that right? It's got like the Scarecrow pumpkin guy on the front.
Oh, what the hell is that?
I'll look it up real quick.
Yeah.
But like there's one like song on it, and the rest of it is just kind of noise.
See, I actually like their noise stuff a lot more than their pop sensibility attempts.
But when they do it very well.
Like, I hated that song with the hip hop aspect to it.
Oh, Bad Moon Rising.
Oh. But
interesting, the song that's the song on there also features Lydia Lunch.
Yeah.
So it's a little bizarre.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah, they're another band that really just they don't necessarily they're not a band who will go, what are we playing in?
Yeah.
Because they'll
But what they do is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like it's genius, like some of the stuff they do.
Stuff that shouldn't go together.
Like they had their gear stole one time and some band offered to loan them gear and it's like, we're gonna jam drumsticks between the neck and the strings. Are you cool with that? Like we're gonna fuck your guitars up. But I don't know. Like there's a certain tone you can get from a jazz master.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was interesting is the whole reason why bands like Dinosaur Jr. and Sonic Youth and all those kind of bands got into those guitars was because they were cheap back then. Because early 80s, no one wanted a Jazzmaster or a Jaguar. So you could find vintage ones cheap because they were considered surf guitars. Mm. And everyone then was like, I need a Strat or a Les Paul. Those are the only two guitars, unless you're like in a hair band and you need some kind of BC Rich or something. I don't know. So those were like, you could get a vintage 65 Jazzmaster or something back then for a couple hundred bucks. But then you find the versatility of it. I mean, the pickups are great on that, even though they're like single coil soap bar looking things. But the selector switches and the things you can do and the way things are placed, the radius of the neck, the length of the neck on a Jazzmaster, even the Jaguars. I mean, Jaguars got a shorter neck, but it's still got the same kind of pickup selector selection going on. Even more options, actually, than the Jazzmaster has. Which is funny, a Jazzmaster and Jaguar surf rock. I don't How did that happen?
I mean, it does have, it can have a very twangy sound.
Yeah, which is kind of why the Smiths, I mean, Johnny Marr. But, I don't know. They were, I don't know.
Which he didn't really play Jaguar during his Smiths days.
No.
He played Rickenbacker.
Rickenbackers, yeah. And Strats, probably.
There's an ES-335 also that I'd seen him play.
Mm-hmm.
But, So, yeah, that's... You've had that for how long now? A couple of years? A
couple of years.
Yeah.
3 years, maybe?
Sounds right.
Three or 4 years.
So you're playing with that. You were going through my amp, Valve Train.
Oh, yeah.
Made locally.
That is a... Kudos to those guys. Who are they? Should we give them a shout-out? Because that thing sounded great.
Valve Train, Rick... He let me, Rick over at Valtrain let me basically borrow the amp.
Yeah, I think so, it sounds like I didn't have to adjust anything on it. I didn't touch anything on the amp ever. It's
got a great reverb on it. It's
really
nice and loud and clean.
I feel bad because like you kind of like shanghaied me or ambushed me on the whole podcasting when I came over to play because
that's the idea. Yeah,
it was just like, hey, let's get together and jam. So I thought I was going to show up, which, like, I don't think you said jam, because you don't like jamming. Let's go play some introspective, incidental music.
Guarantee that's not what I said.
No, it wasn't. But, so yeah, I came over with, like, limited, I came over with a ME70, Boss ME70, and then you had a rack piece of mine still over there, and that's all I played through. If I had known that we were going to do something, I would have brought over my pedal board.
We'll do it again.
Which my pedal board's stupid.
Yeah.
It's huge, stupid.
You have multiple pedal boards.
I do.
And you probably have more pedals than you have to fit on those multiple pedal boards.
I do.
We'll get a picture. We'll put it up on the website.
Yeah. One, two, three pedal boards.
By the way, there isn't a website yet.
Okay.
I'll have to make a website.
Three pedal boards and then like four shelves of pedals. And a Pamela Anderson video.
Is it the Pamela Anderson video?
No.
Okay.
It's back when she was Canadian.
But the ME70 sounded really good. Like, you made some crazy noise. There's a section of the recording where you're basically doing a My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah. I, so, I figured that out because that's when I went to Kansas City for 2 months, 2-3 months. I can't remember the last time I went. That's all I took with me because I didn't want to take my pedal board with me. Mm-hmm. And I took that and my Jazzmaster and my four track.
Were you using the Vox the other night? You didn't bring that. No. You just had the ME70?
Yeah.
And the rack.
Yeah.
What is the rack? It's a Lesis?
It's a Lesis. I have so many elite. That's okay. What was that movie with Mel Gibson? Conspiracy Theory?
Okay, yeah.
Where like it's anyone like
Hamlet.
Who, if you buy Catcher in the Rye, you're on a
watch list.
If they had that for Lesis Quadriverbs, I'd be on a watch list because I have the Quadriverb Plus. I have the Lesis Midiverb 4. I have I have two regular quadriverbs. I have microverbs, midiverbs 3. I think it was a midiverb 3. I have a lot of them. I have
the point in all this is Andrew Chapman likes his effects.
I do. Yeah. That's the great thing about Guitar Center too, is that a lot of times the employees don't know what they're buying in, so you can find great stuff for a great bargain. Like my Aphex I have over here, which they had no idea what that was, and they priced it to like $50 and
scooped that one up.
Yeah, or the TC Electronic. Which one is that? Is that a G major or a G sharp? I think it's a G sharp guitar effects. And then my Holy Grail, the Roland Space Echo. RE-201.
We'll get a picture of that too.
Yeah. That's my baby.
Talk about that story about purchasing that.
I went to, what was it, Central Florida Fairgrounds.
It's coming up again.
Oh, God. Yep. Which I got ripped off at that show, too. Mm. Or no, the year before I got ripped off because some guy sold me this Korg DRV-1000, DRV-2000, sorry. And a,
let's sell it short.
Yeah, just not the 1000. That, and he sold me a Lesis Quadriverb GT, which is terrible because they came out with a GT to try to adjust the impedance on the input on the back, because a lot of people, like, this was meant to be a rack effect.
Grand Touring Edition.
Yes. Yes, it's Grand Touring. Yes. It was built by engineers at NASA. No.
For Ferrari.
For Ferraris.
Yeah, yeah.
It's red. No. They built it for a guitar because they found out a lot of people were using the quadriverbs for guitar instead of just rack effects for your ADAT system or whatever. So they tried to make it better for guitar, but the sounds they put in were not the ones that came with the quadriverb. They're terrible. Like, here's your Shredmaster sound. It's like, eh. So he sold me that, which I bought it. That's my fault. But this thing doesn't work.
Oh, I like how you still have it in your rack anyway.
Yeah, because it's a nice reverb if I can get it to work. Yeah.
So the Space Echo.
Oh, Space Echo, yeah. I went to the show looking for a Space Echo, and I walked around forever and could not find a single one. I found a bunch of stuff I was interested in, but I got to the point where I was almost going to settle for some other tape echo system that was solid state, not tube. Like, the tube version's better, and I was going to get the solid state, and I was like, eh, but I really don't want this. And right as I'm about to close a deal with that guy, he's like, so what'd you come here looking for? I was like, oh, I really want a Space Echo. He's like, oh, there's a guy over there that has one, like, behind the counter. I'm like, okay. Sorry. Went over there. Talk to this guy.
Like, you're the worst salesman ever.
You just shot yourself. So I went over there and just like,
hold on. That reminds me of a story that one time my dad went into a Home Depot, mm-hmm. and he asked them where they have some sort of tool, and he's like, oh, Lowe's.
Lowe's has those.
Yeah. He's like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah. Okay.
Not gonna see you again.
We're going from orange to blue. See you later.
Anyway, so you go over to get your Space Echo.
Yeah, it was actually a shop that you know of, I guess, from Pensacola.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it Blue Angel?
Sure. I have no idea.
There's a couple.
I remember, like, when I bought it, you knew who the shop was or something happened.
Yeah, and there's only so many.
It's Pensacola.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you got a place that fries mullet and sells...
It's delicious, too.
Oysters, and
sure,
then you
it's
got
a crab fish,
one... Oh, sorry.
But
he had it priced at like $1,400 or something, and then I walked back by again. He had it $1,200, and I was like, "You're insane!" And I left, and some people I worked with, or used to work with, started haggling the shit out of him. They called me and said he'll take $700 for $750. So I was like, "I will be right back." So I came up and bought it.
That's a steep drop right there.
Yeah. He was mad. He was like, just like, if I sell it to you, you guys leave me the fuck alone. Go away. Which, I mean, it had its quirks when I got it, and it still does. Like, the tape that was in it was terrible. I tried to make my own tape, and it did not work out well. Yeah, I tried to fix the tape that was in there, and it did not work out well. But I found a guy in Canada who makes them pretty cheap. So I've got like 4 extra tapes now. He does great work. I can't think of his name, or I'd give him a shout out.
Is that Canadian dollars?
No. Okay. Euros.
Is it in metric?
It was in metrics. It was in metric feet.
It's like, I don't know if I can sell you, you know, the 48-inch tape,
it's like,
but I can
damn
sell
it.
You the however many centimeters.
1.75 meters.
But now you have a Space Echo.
I have a Space Echo.
The thing you've always wanted.
I've always wanted. Yes.
Now, you would consider yourself fulfilled in life?
I thought so. There's other things. Yeah, there's always going to come up something you want. It's the, like, I always wanted a Super Reverb, so I got one. And then I realized I still wanted a JC120, so I got one. And I've had that trainer forever.
Yeah, it's the kind of the curse when it comes to playing musical instruments. Is like there's always something else.
And you always feel like you can sell something, like, oh, I don't ever use this anymore. And then, like, the day before you decide to go sell it, you plug it in and play with it, and you're like, fuck, I like this thing. Yeah, that's like all my pedals.
Yeah, I feel bad about selling anything musical.
Yep.
But yeah.
I have a lot of stuff.
So we discussed briefly a second ago how I don't like the word jam.
Yes.
What is a better word to describe jam that I can use when I'm trying to attract people to do this podcast?
You know, I was thinking of incidental or something like that. But to go back to Sonic Youth and their noisy stuff you're talking about, they played Orlando like a surprise show one time. And they booked themselves at the Social as Perspective Musicale. And I got there late, and it was sold out. And, like, my friend's wife comes out, and she's, like, taking a break because it's loud. And she's like, Sonic Youth hasn't started playing yet, but they're up on stage playing as Perspective Musicale, but you'd hate it because it's just noise. I'm like, no, that's what I'm here for. So I, like, snuck into the show. Like, she distracted the bouncer. I dipped in behind, and... Awesome show. So Perspective Musicale.
I think just saying musicale makes it as douchey as the word jam. It's a different kind of douchey, though.
It is. It's highbrow.
Because jam's like hacky sack.
What's wrong with hacky sack?
There's lots of things wrong with hacky sack.
Dude, if they would have given me college credit for hacky sack, I'd be a fucking PhD.
I think that, that just the word, when you're putting different... emphasis
on a illable
on syllables then it can be perceived as
douchey,
arty,
douchey arty,
but a different kind of douche.
Yes,
than like the jam band crew.
Yes.
So we're not to the bottom of it yet.
Incidental music,
that does describe it.
It's incidental.
But then it...
I mean, you don't want to go freeform because then you're just straight up fucking jazz.
Yeah, I don't want to do freeform.
Yeah.
We'll think about it.
Because that's just jazz and not the good kind.
Would you say the RE20 is your favorite piece of equipment that you own?
201.
Oh, see, I'm sorry. The 20 is the pedal. That's right.
Yeah. Which the pedal's not bad.
I have a pedal. I like the pedal.
I have two of them.
But, yeah.
I actually have two of them.
Because everybody needs one.
Because one was, what, somebody bought one at a Guitar Center really cheap, and they didn't know what it was. So I was like, oh, that's only $100. Okay.
The 201, then.
Is that my favorite piece
is
of gear?
Is that your favorite piece of gear that you have? Out of the... If it isn't, what is?
That.
What is the piece of gear that you don't think you could do without?
That is tough. That's like, which kid do you like best?
And my answer, none of them.
Well, I don't have any
of my own,
so I can't make that call. I mean, it just sounds like a terrible thing to think about, but I'm sure that parents actually know they have one that's their favorite.
Oh, guaranteed.
Like, we would have flipped that one over if we had known.
It's totally not me in my family, by the way.
Yeah, newborns learning to swim. I don't know, man. I do like my 201.
Well, apart from that, go over maybe just one other one that you particularly care for.
Well, obviously my Quadriverbs, I guess. Like, I don't know. I do have that cold catcher in a rye. Yep. Conspiracy theory collection of those really shitty reverb units that I love so much.
All right, well, to wrap it up.
Yes.
Because we've been going on for a long time now.
And your wife is probably texting you like, where are you?
No. Okay, once.
Once.
Like, tell Chappie to shut up. This is a situation I run into on a regular basis where I'll be listening to a song.
Mm-hmm.
And not realize that, oh, that's where I got that sound from. Does that happen to you? And can you think of a particular instance? Like it's just like part of your sound, and you didn't realize that you'd probably subconsciously.
Well, I would like to say something about like that with the Verve, but. When it came to hearing Nick McCabe's guitar sound, it kind of like I felt that like I found home. Like, that's already what I do. But I do have a similar situation where I had some friends and we were trying to start a band.
Mm.
And we were in my living room jamming. Jamming. I said jamming, Kyle.
You weren't incidentally jamming. Creating
we were
music.
We're incidentally creating music in a room with multiple people.
Okay. Incidental music kind of sounds like you fell over.
Yeah, it sounds like really scientific, too.
All of a sudden, there was music.
It's almost like found sounds. Yeah. But we, we're hashing out this jam. Like, we started jamming, and, it really took off in this really great direction. We're like, oh, then we took a break, came back, tried starting it up again, and we just kept working on it, and we kept working and dialing it in more and more and more. And finally, the drummer just stopped playing. He's like, this is a Cure song. We're like, what? He's like, this is a Cure song. We're like, no, it's not. And we start playing again. Oh, like, ah, oh, shit. It was, I can't remember what Cure song it was, but it was like, yeah, we just played a Cure song. We just wrote.
Yeah.
Put effort into it.
Yeah.
To write a song that already existed.
In my old band, we had a song that.
Was that band's name? Manchester United?
Blackburn.
Blackburn.
Check them out. They're on Facebook right now.
Could just gone with Rovers.
Could have.
Then you just sound like a douchebag.
Yeah.
Band of fiddle players. Of
jammers.
Irish gypsies.
But yeah, we had a song that my friend Matt had written, kind of just on keyboard.
Mm.
And right away, we knew that it was a Supergrass song.
Great band.
It is a great band.
I love Supergrass.
And I think we just figured it's not well enough known. We're still just going to roll with
it. Just go with it.
We never recorded it or anything, but
yeah,
we were just like, I mean, it's got different words. Yeah. It's the same exact piano part. But nobody will ever realize. And nobody ever did.
Now they will. You just told the whole world.
The four people that might remember that we were a band.
And those two that bought the CD.
It's true. We did have a couple
people. Or was it a cassette?
No.
Oh, you're straight up CD generation.
That's right.
Yeah, you guys didn't make cassettes.
We burned our CDs on there.
See, I remember having CD to burners. Like dupe cassettes to give to friends. And then when the CD burner came out, it was like $9,000. So you had a friend that had a CD dupe. You're like, can I bring my tapes over and you can burn them to CD for me? I'll just bring my 4-track. We'll just plug it in. Yeah. Which I still have my 4-track cassette. Yeah, I still use it.
So the moral of the story is, hey, if you copy a song that's obscure enough, just roll with it.
Yeah. I had a friend that lived by that. He actually learned it at the audio school he went to. It's actually kind of a formula that there's nothing wrong with a song being similar to something else because the average music listener is not a real music listener. So when they feel that similarity, they're more drawn towards it.
I didn't even realize, and this was two of their big hits, but Oasis, I had bought, that was kind of new to playing guitar, but I'd bought like the book, like the tab book my mind just went blank. The one after What's the Story, Morning Glory?
Definitely Maybe.
No, that's before.
That's before. Be Here Now.
Be Here Now. So I bought the book for that.
Wow.
And I was learning.
Most people didn't even buy the CD.
Huh?
I said most people didn't even buy the CD.
It's true. But I was fascinated by it. I like the song. I still like it. The Do You Know What I Mean song.
Yeah.
And the video was in pretty heavy rotation at the time when it first came out because it was following their biggest record. And so I buy the book and I'm learning how to play it. And I was like, and I already knew how to play Wonderwall at this point.
Yeah.
And then I realized all they did was rewrite Wonderwall.
Well, isn't like the first track on that album just a track from the previous album?
Well, Do You Know What I Mean is
is
the first song on that.
Yeah. So it's even like the original recording and then it goes into something else and then goes into the song. Like they actually put a snippet over there in the beginning. Like
they might have because
there's a helicopter noise.
There's a part that's like in reverse.
Yep.
Like
Stone Roses. Yeah. Best of. Like let's fill a slot.
Yeah.
We're just going to put this one song
turn
on.
One song,
just
put it around.
Hold backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it works backwards.
It does.
Yeah. But yeah, that was their biggest hit. They're just like, gonna do it again.
Right. Makes sense.
But there's enough like different sounds around it that it doesn't. But if you're just playing it on acoustic, same song.
That principle is the entire reason why the new country scene still goes on.
That's true.
Because none of the country music fans really listen to country music the way they used to. So they're just like, this sounds familiar. Because it is.
It's a song about drinking beer at a party.
Or a bar.
Or bar, but mainly.
I love this bar.
I think like the new trend is like almost like beach country songs.
Yeah. They went hip hop for a little bit there.
Yeah, I think it still exists.
Then they went to like Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kenny Chesney.
God.
Anyway.
So,
thanks for joining me, Andrew.
Thank you.
Actually, I'm joining you. I'm at your house.
You are.
So.
And I was at your house playing music. Or did that happen? Wait, that was before.
But before you go, we'll have to get together and play again.
This is true. And then
with the other kids that we play with.
Yeah.
And then I can grill them about
their music.
Their music and what they know about.
You will know none of those bands.
Anytime he ever mentions a band to me.
Chrome.
I'm like,
Gong.
I don't know.
You will not know
any of
those bands.
Where did you find any of this?
Yes. The like, obscurest side of 70s and 60s psychedelia.
Whatever. I think that on a broad spectrum that my music is on the more obscure side.
No.
But
no.
That stuff.
Yeah.
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 So hopefully we'll get together. We'll We'll chat with them.
We have to.
Yep. You can be my co-host that time.
Can I really?
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting. It's a prospect.
Oh, man. I have a job.
Incidental podcasting.
Yeah. So I can be somewhat creative.
Cool.
Thank you.
Later.